reflected. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I quit my job without having a job lined up. I am single. I live in this apartment that's like $1,700 a month. My car note is $450. I have this, I have that. Oh my God, I have no job. That to me, I was like, okay, I fucked up. But that's okay. I'm going to be able to get back on my feet. Well, I think that was a Thursday. And from that day all the way until Monday, total blackout. Complete blackout.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Well, welcome back, everyone. Got a audience in the studio with us tonight, and a returning guest. We have Josie back on the show with us tonight. Give a round of applause for Josie.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us for a special edition of the Most High Mavens.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, we're really excited to have you on, and you've been a friend of the show for a little while now, but we've never really talked about how you and I know each other, mm-hmm. What the connection here is. So why don't you let our listeners know?
So I've been working in dental for over 10 years, and I worked at a pediatric dental company for 6 of those years. And I was an operations manager. I was filling in for a manager that had been had stepped out for maternity leave, and I was Sarah's manager. So we had met through text, and then one day, after she put in her notice, I was working up in the coming location and sitting next to her. I had heard little bits and pieces about Sarah. People were like, hey, so Sarah needs to leave work like right at 5, and on like certain days of the week she has to be working like closer to home and she has somewhere to be. And I just was like, okay, like so specific. And then they're like, she quit, and her mentor said that her mentor suggested that this isn't like a good fit for her. So I'm like, okay, there's like some things that are a little bit like weird about the things that she's saying. So we were working together, and I just flat out asked her, I was like, are you sober? Are you in recovery? because there's like certain things, like I have like a little bit of experience, and she's like, yeah, I am. And you know, she had put in her notice, and I was like, well, is there any like convincing you to stay? And you were like, no. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to waste my time, because if I know anything, it's that people that are in recovery are pretty strong-willed, and I'm not going to waste my time asking this girl to stay. So she was like, there's no like no money, no raise. I'd rather just be done. And we had each other's phone number, and I always remember we were having a conversation, and she was like, can I give you a hug? And, you know, reach out if you, you know, need anything. And actually, I remember you also told me about the podcast. You were like, I go to this podcast. And you can come and you can eat. And I was like, I was still drinking. So I was like, oh, maybe, yeah. And anyway, we met at work. And then from mm-hmm. there, we just stayed in touch.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really interesting thing when your previous manager calls you from treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or tells you, I didn't drink wine last night, but then
comes into work whispering like, guess what? I didn't drink last night and it felt great. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so proud of you. Good job. Yeah. So obviously if you end up in treatment, some things in your life happened that made some dominoes fall. So What happened? What started? When did you meet alcohol? What?
So I met alcohol. My mom is from Dominican Republic, and growing up, there was no drinking age. And so drinking was pretty normalized. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I drank for the first time when I was 9. But then growing up, it was at home. It wasn't something that was hidden. My parents would have a drink at night. I never saw them like get drunk or anything like that, but it was pretty normal. And like for events and parties and whatnot. And then when I was in high school, my parents were pretty strict. So I didn't really drink that much. I didn't really start like drinking and partying until I graduated high school. So yeah, it was something that wasn't like taboo or like not allowed at home. I remember my parents would be like, you don't drink to like get drunk, and it's, you know, but it's not like appropriate to drink out of the home, but it's also not something that we're just gonna like let you just open the liquor cabinet and start.
Right. No, my parents were very similar, because they were like, yeah, drinking's not taboo. You don't drink to get drunk. Mm-hmm. And then when people come over, you don't drink because you don't know what struggles they might have with alcohol. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then we had what we called the Baptist wine closet. And that was whenever people came over, we hid all the alcohol because we don't know what relationship they might have with alcohol. So,
right.
And it was no like, it was just like if they were in the know, they knew our family drank, but not to get drunk. It was just.
And I grew up in a Catholic church. And so it's like when I got communion, I would drink wine with communion. I do remember that I was always really excited about the wine. And I told my mom, like, that the wine tastes so good. It's such good wine.
But like communion wine is so sweet, though.
Yeah, super sweet. But I was like, it's so good. And I remember I was an altar server and we were in the back and we were trying to figure out, like, where's the wine at? But we, you know, we were scared, so we never like sat back there and got like wasted, but I did like the taste of wine. I enjoyed it, and I remember my parents being like, you know, having a glass of wine with dinner, or having like one single shot of rum, having a shot of rum when you're sick, that kind of stuff.
Right,
it was normal.
Yeah. I think, do you think maybe like in the religious setting, it was more exciting because at that point, oh, this is sacred.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like there is more of like an element of badassery if it's like, ooh, I'm not supposed to do it this way, but I'm going to.
Yeah. We're chugging the blood of Christ.
That's metal as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, at what point, so you said like it was just kind of normal, but then you graduated and that's when it kind of like the doors opened.
So for, you know, for me, I remember seeing like in magazines and on TV, you know, like Paris Hilton, Nicole Richie, they were like going out, they were partying, they were drinking. And I was like, that seems like so much fun. I can't wait to be able to do that. And my friends, I had girlfriends and they would go out. And their moms would, like, pick them up, and they'd be like, we got so drunk this weekend, and my mom. And I'm like, gosh, like, I want to live life that way. That's so much fun. So I graduated high school. My mom was like, you can go to a party, and you have to be home by midnight. I was not home by midnight. And I went to this party with my girlfriends, and there's a bunch of people. I got into University of Oregon, and so I met a bunch of people that were going to go there as well. I got to this party. We were chugging Four Locos. And Jose
Cuervo.
That just
revealed your age right there.
Yeah, I know. So we're trying, the Four Locos when they were good Four Locos. And it was the green and pink one. And I was drinking those like crazy. And we were smoking weed. And I just remember people were like, gosh, Josie, you're so funny. Like, where have you been? Because like everybody knew each other in high school. They had been going out. People only knew me like at school. I played sports. But no one knew me really outside of that. And so they were like, where have you been? Like, where has this girl been? And I just remember feeling like on top of the world. I'm like, finally, you know, I feel popular. I feel cool. People, you know, they're like, you're so funny, this and that. I remember looking at pictures from like our digital cameras and they were like, you were so funny right here. And like, you don't remember this and you remember that. And I was like, this is it for me. Like, this is, I have like come into my own. I got home. My mom was like, it just passed curfew. You're supposed to, you know, now you're 18 and you were supposed to be at my midnight. She's going off on me. I run to the kitchen sink and I puke. And she's like, oh my God, in my clean kitchen sink. And she's like, why is it hot pink? Because of the four local. And I remember the next day, she was like, I was so scared because, you know, my parents were so strict and I was so scared. And she was like, I don't want you to drink like that because you could get hurt. You could be taken advantage of and you're going to college and you're going to be living on your own. And I want you to practice safe drinking. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I know. And that was like my first time being like really hungover. She took me to the beach. We like had a little day together, her, my sister and I. And I was like, okay, this is cool. But she was like, do not get blackout drunk. Like, don't do it. But I ended up going to University of Oregon. And it was just like, I started taking pills like Adderall, Vyvanse, Ritalin, any stimulants, edibles, smoking, drinking, all that stuff. And so, I mean, the advice of like, don't get blackout. I like getting blackout drunk. I was like, getting blackout drunk is awesome because I like that the next day people are like, remember you said this? You're so funny. Because I felt like I'm fitting in, right. You know? It's just silly, but it's fun. Yeah. Like it's goofy, silly, fun, and I get to be myself and like show this side of me,
right?
And people like it, and I want to be liked.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, you know, you get to live a double life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially like people are like, oh, don't drink to black out, and it's like, why else are you drinking? Like, when that's the whole point.
Right.
You know, because it's like, why? Because that's something like I'll, you know, like even in sobriety, I've thought about when I, you know, like that fleeting thought of like, oh, you know, a beer would be really good right now. And then it's like, a beer? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Why am I going to have a beer? It's like, if I want something that tastes good, I have 1,000 drinks that I like that are non-alcoholic, right, that taste good.
Yeah.
A beer, the point of it, still, I think, like, the point of it is to get fucked up.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, yeah, so I shouldn't have...
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then like when I'm like sit, like I even drink caffeine alcoholically, like when I'm sitting at work and I have like my little Red Bull and it's gone in 30 seconds, I'm like, this is why I can't drink.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So right.
And so so your mom warns you of the dangers of getting blackout, of the dangers of being drunk in public in college. You can get hurt, you can get taken advantage of.
Yeah.
You're 18, you know everything. You don't heed her warning.
No.
What happens?
Well, I was like, well, that stuff isn't going to happen to me. Like, I'll get blackout drunk, but, like, I'm not going to get hurt. And I was just telling this, but I did. I was drunk, and I was on a friend's shoulders, and she tripped, and I fell off her shoulders, split my chin open, you know, got really injured, had to go to the emergency room. You know, I'm like, well... You know, there's like girls and they're getting blackout drunk and they're being taken advantage of. Well, they're not surrounded by good enough friends. My friends wouldn't let me get assaulted. Mm. And then you're at a party and next thing you know, you're in a room with a guy that you don't know and they're trying to sleep with you. And you're like, whoa, 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 I don't want this. Where are my friends now? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like what I realized is early on, even like 18, 19, I started making the list of like, well, I'm not going to be sexually assaulted. And then something happens and it's like, well, that wasn't rape. And then something else happens. It's like, but, well, I don't, you know, is it? And you start to justify these things. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, yes, I got injured, but, you know, I didn't break my teeth. It could have been worse.
Mm-hmm. Like the arbitrary lines in the sand.
Yes.
And you just keep, you cross it and you're like, oh, well, but there's the next one. That's,
yeah.
It's fine. You know what? Well, this didn't happen, so
yeah,
it's fine.
And I wasn't getting into any real trouble. I wasn't getting into real big girl trouble. You know, I no DUI, no jail, no being questioned by, like, the cops or investigated, and all these things that, like, happen.
You weren't questioned? Man. I never got arrested, but college, man, was that questioned.
Not in college, but then I had a fake ID, and I tried to get into a club, and they stopped me, and I got arrested. I got handcuffed and I got taken to the drunk tank and I had to do all this stuff. And then I had to go to court and do community service, but it got taken off of my record. And it was right before I turned 21 that I got caught. So it's like, that really wasn't that bad. I got handcuffed, taken to the drunk tank, but I wasn't drunk and they let me leave. And I wasn't actually, you know, it's like, again, the justification, it's like, I'm comparing myself to other people because it's like, I'm not as bad as them.
Right.
And it's like, and like I said, you know, with like smoking weed and like, you know, taking, it's like I'm taking stimulants because I'm a college student and you would take stimulants too if you were in college to be able to keep up with this workload and work a job.
Right. No, I remember that was one of the excuses I used when I was like, my dealer was out and I was trying to get a stimulant from anywhere. And I worked with a bunch of college students and I was working multiple jobs at the time so I could fund my drug habit. And I was like, I know one of them has Adderall or knows somebody who has Adderall. I'm like, but I don't want to out myself as someone who does Adderall. So I'm like, oh, you know what? But I've been published in magazines. I'm a freelance writer. People know this. So I'm like, hey guys, I have this really big deadline coming up. Like,
yes.
Do you know where I can get Adderall? And obviously like one person was like, they knew. They're like, Sarah, come on.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, like for real, I have this deadline. He was like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We all have deadlines.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up transferring out of University of Oregon. I went to Portland State and then I lived at home for a little bit and that, you know, there was like me at home, which was like normal college drinking, and then like me going out and like raging and, you know, getting blackout. And then I moved out in an apartment with a couple of roommates. And, you know, it was just work, school, getting messed up, getting drunk, getting, you know, finding every reason in the book to drink. Mm-hmm. And then justifying drinking by myself by like, well, it's okay because I'm having a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. Or
wine is classy by yourself.
Yeah.
That's acceptable.
And if you smoke weed by yourself, you smoke a joint. And if you're going to take Adderall by yourself, you snort it. But
obviously.
Because you're not going to snort in front of people.
You're hanging out with the wrong people.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that I always was around people. Well, you know, I don't know where a lot of these people are now, but it was, no one was out of control, and people that would be out of control were like the ones that were getting like into big kid trouble, that it's like, did you hear like blank blank got a DUI? Like not a part of our group anymore because like we are not that to that level yet. Like how dare you? And so it was all pretty like normal, and a lot of people were, I mean, they're pretty privileged, you know. So.
But at any point, so like you are, you know, getting out of control a little bit, but your friends aren't, you know,
yeah,
or shunning the people who are.
Yeah.
At any point, are they going, like, sitting you down and being like, hey, Josie?
Yeah. Yeah. So one time, so fast forward, so I'm in college. I had tried cocaine for the first time. And then I tried it with a group of people. And then after that, I knew I liked it. But my friends weren't doing it. And so there was one night where I had it by myself. I was at a restaurant with my friends having drinks. I snuck away into the restroom, did it by myself. And I'm like up here, you know, I'm drinking and I'm like wired. And I thought it was a good idea to go to an apartment of my friend's boyfriend where he lived with a bunch of guy roommates. And one of those roommates was like talking shit to me over text. And I was like, let's go over there right now. And I'm going to confront him. And my friends were like, okay, They're thinking like, okay, yeah, we're going to confront him normally. And I like bang on the door and they open it. And I took my shoes off. I threw my shoes at them. They have like a living room table and it had a bong on it and stuff. I swiped everything off the table. I started to destroy this apartment. And everyone's like, including my friends, everyone's like, what is going on? And I am going insane. I ended up getting like pushed to the ground. These guys are kicking me. And I'm like the Incredible Hulk. I'm like going nuts. I'm like 110 pounds. And I have to be dragged to this apartment. And my friends were like, what the fuck happened? Like, we were having drinks and you went to the bathroom and you came back on like some whole other shit.
Yeah,
and
was it cocaine or PCP? Well, like, what the fuck?
Who knows? They didn't know though. I didn't tell them, but then I admitted it to one of my friends and she was like, if you do cocaine again, I am going to tell your parents. She's like, if you do it again, she's like, you keep doing it. Like, you did it with some friends. Now you're doing it by yourself. I'm telling on you. She's like, this is out of control. And, like, this was, like, people, you know, we were, like, on Twitter. People were, like, blah, 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 blah. And I was, like, I'm going to find you. But that time I remember my friends were, like, this isn't normal. Like, first of all, none of my girlfriends were doing any type of drugs. So they're, like, that's already weird that you did it. But now you're, like, doing it by yourself and you're causing a scene. Like, we're not going to be your friend. We're going to tell your parents. And because I care so much about what people think of me, I was, like, I remember getting on my hands and knees and begging my friend. I was like, please, please don't say anything. I'm never going to do it again, please. But really, it was like, okay, I need to just get this under control and not do it in a way where I'm going to get like in trouble or get caught.
Right. It's like it's time to amp up the gymnastics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously there's only so much you can save face, you know, when you're in the throes of addiction. So at any point, or like at what point really, do you change who you're around? And so people aren't like, were you the type of person that was keeping people around who were worse off than you? So then you could keep up with yourself and your appearances.
Yeah. So when I met my son's dad, my oldest son's dad, that is somebody who I met that was worse. We worked together and we would party together. And I felt like I met somebody that could like keep up with me. And then it was just, I mean, again, it's like, it was just fun. Then I got pregnant and so my fun stopped, but he kept going. And I remember my roommate at the time, she was like, he drinks every day, like liquor every day. She's like, isn't that weird? And I was like, yeah, kind of. So I'm like, hey, you're drinking a lot. Like, can you just stop drinking, please? It's embarrassing. And you know, throughout my pregnancy, then I started to like learn he was addicted to pills.
And you had no suspicion prior?
No,
to
because
that?
I thought he was like me in the sense of like, we drink, we have fun. I didn't know about the pills. I knew that he would like dabble here and there with like drugs, but I didn't know about the pill addiction and the extent of it until I was sober. You know, I'm like clear headed and I'm noticing certain things. And now looking back on it, it's like withdrawals. He's having withdrawals. He's stealing. He's disappearing for hours on end. He's going to sketchy places. He's things just start going missing. You know, where's this? Where's that? You know, it just a lot was going on. And that's when I was like, what? And he had then finally admitted, he's like, oh, I take painkillers, but I want to stop and I want to stop drinking, but I don't know how. And yeah.
Okay. And so then like the veil starts leaving your eyes, and are you then figuring out like, oh, like maybe this is a bad situation for me to be in, or yeah. Are you just, okay.
Yeah. I was like, well, I knew it was a bad situation because I was like, this sucks to be stolen from. And for me, I think that like, I remember getting into a lot of arguments and like the disappearing and the, you know, all that stuff. And then, I had my son and we were in the hospital. I had a C-section and the nurse came by and she was like, hey, do you need like any more pain medication? I was like, no, I think I'm okay. And he texted me immediately and he was like, are you fucking kidding me? He's like, tell her to come back. Tell her you changed your mind and that you want it. He's like, you're being so selfish. Like, I could use those. I'm in pain. And I was like, okay. All right then. So she came and I like took the Percocets and I like hid them. And I was like so uncomfortable. I was so confused. And then I remember he also left me in the hospital by myself for, I mean, hours and hours and hours. And he was like out getting high. Mm. Yeah. And then I look back on like pictures of like my baby shower and he is just completely toast. I mean, gone. And I remember people were like, the photos of you guys together and like his behavior, I mean, he was like slumped. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, God, this is so, I just kept thinking like, it's so embarrassing. I don't know how to cover this up. I don't know how to hide this. I don't know how to deal with this. I'm at the right. time I was 21. I had my son when I was 22. And this was my first time really in the face of like, or dealing with addiction. And I just remember being so confused. Cause I'm like, I thought we were having fun. Like, and this isn't fun. And yeah. Now I'm struggling. You know, I went back to work like 6 weeks after I had Joseph because I had to, because we were living together and he just, I mean, all the money was like going towards his habit, you know? Right. Like it was very confusing. It was, yeah.
And I find a lot with alcoholics and addicts is like codependency is usually goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So at this point, are you noticing, like looking back, are you seeing like any like codependent behaviors cropping up where you're just like, okay, like I can fix him.
Yeah.
I can explain this away. Like my family won't be
yeah.
suspicious. My friends won't be suspicious. What did that look like?
Well, we lived with a couple of roommates. And like I said, when he wouldn't have his his drugs or whatever, he would just turn into like a tornado. And, you know, my roommates would come home from work and be like, why are there holes in the wall? Why is there broken stuff? What is going on? I remember they sat me down. They were like, you have to move. They're like, you have to get out of here. They're like, we don't know if this is like a domestic violence situation. We don't know what's going on, but we need you guys to just get out. Mm-hmm. And so I found my own apartment because I didn't want to tell my family what was really going on because I was so embarrassed and confused and afraid. I got an apartment on my own that like I could barely afford, and he moved in with me, but it was horrible. And I would just make excuses for things, you know. He would get arrested. Well, where is he? Where's this? And, oh, he, they, oh, yeah, oh, well, oh, blah, 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 blah. And
right.
Constantly lying. And it was, yeah. Until he finally went to jail. I remember it was like a huge relief. I was like, right. Oh my gosh, finally. He went to jail and then he went into treatment and stayed sober for like about a year.
I remember I had a partner that was supposed to go to jail and I was like, I can breathe. And then they ended up getting house arrest instead. And so I was like, ah, well, now I don't have to tell my family they went to jail, but they're still not at this holiday thing. And my family is like, oh, where are they? And I'm like, oh, they're helping on their grandparents' farm.
Yeah. And you don't want them. And like, I remember I got to the point where it's like, I don't want this person in my life. I'm so exhausted. I mean, I'm a new mom. I'm still going to college. I'm still working. I'm trying to maintain on the outside this perfect life.
Right.
And I'm drinking, you know, I'm drinking and still going out with like my friends and whatever, but I'm still trying to maintain this image of I have my shit together and like I am, everything is okay. Everything is fine. Everything is cool, you know.
You have your shit together, but you're raising your kid by yourself in an apartment you can't afford, going to school, drinking, and your baby daddy's in jail.
Yeah.
But you got your shit together for sure, dude.
Yeah, like, I'm so strong. I'm so powerful, you know? Like, I got this. Like, and then, you know, when he was getting help, it was like, oh, here's another layer. Like, now I'm a single mom, but, like, I'm supporting him through his struggles. Oh, and people are like, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. Good job, girl. Like, yeah, be there for him and help him. And I was going to NA meetings with him.
Aww.
Oh, yeah.
I always love seeing – I love seeing partners show up at meetings in support of their partner because I'm like, I'm going to take a gander or take a little guess that you're supposed to be here too. But – you're not ready yet. I'll see you later.
And because they were NA meetings, it's like I would hear certain things and I could relate a little bit, but I was like, I don't do drugs.
Right. Yet.
So some of this stuff kind of feels like it's hitting home. But I don't do narcotics.
Right.
And cocaine was just a fun thing, a party drug. I'm not doing it by myself. And I'm, again, not in jail, not in trouble. Right. I didn't know anything about sober living or treatment. I'm like, treatment? Vans of people, like, you know,
Vans of people.
Yeah, I'm like, what? I'm just here to support my boyfriend. I'm not like you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when do you drop the act?
So when he eventually, we got engaged when he was sober, then he relapsed. He thought he could drink normally and he couldn't. And everything escalated rather quickly. My family moved here to Georgia. This was in 2017. And I was like, okay, listen, I went through this with you once. I'm out of here. I'm taking our son and I'm moving to Georgia with my family. And I'm going to have a fresh start and I'm going to have no problems because I'm leaving this behind. And he was just like, you know what? All right, I understand. Bye. Because he was back into, you know, being actively in addiction. So I moved to Georgia and I started completely fresh. I drove here from Oregon. My mom flew up. We packed. I had a 2013 Chevy Sonic, teeny tiny. And me, my son, and my mom packed as much as we packed up and I drove here.
The classic geographical cure.
Yeah.
And it worked, right?
Yeah, it did for a little bit. For a little bit until loneliness and further identity crisis being in the South.
Right.
Now, you know, if it's like I'm struggling with identity on my life, you know, with like where I'm from, my background, my culture. And now it's like I was in Oregon. I finally get comfortable. Now I'm in Georgia. Everything is completely different.
Yeah.
And this was when I would say the drinking by myself really started. because it's like I have no friends. Mm-hmm. I have my family, but I barely know my extended family. And my sister was in college, so I just started drinking by myself in my bedroom. Yeah.
And at any point, did you start noticing, like, oh, wait a minute, these behaviors I didn't like about, you know, your son's father, or these, oh, these things I thought I wasn't like these people at those meetings. Like, are you starting to notice, like, wait?
Yeah. I'm like, well, it's not normal to be hiding my drinking, and I'm hiding bottles, and I'm waiting for my family to be out of the house for me to take out the trash. And I'm putting bottles into my backpack when the bottle count is too high, and my family is just always home. So I'm putting it in my backpack. I'm putting a bottle in my purse, and I'm cushioning it to not make mm-hmm. a sound. And yeah, that's when I was like, this is, you know, but still, it's not a problem. Like, it's not, right.
It's not normal, but I got it under control.
It's not normal, but it's okay. And then I started to, like, manipulate people around me. I'm manipulating my coworkers to have a drink at lunch. And then let's have a drink after work. And let's drink. We're going to the store, drink. We're going to... And my sister's in college, and I'm like, you know, any excuse, really, to, like I said, to drink with other people and convince... and by watching them drink in abnormal situations, mm-hmm. it made me feel normal. Like, see, everybody does do these things.
I always love when people talk about drinking to go to the store, because that was never something I did. But I did cocaine to go shopping. Mm-hmm. So I'm like sitting outside of Publix doing key bumps. I'm like, gotta go get my ground beef.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I can't do that without cocaine.
Yeah.
So you know it's not normal, but you continue on. Mm-hmm. Do things get worse?
So I ended up meeting somebody. I had my second son. He's 4 now. I was pregnant during the pandemic, which might have just been a blessing in disguise, because we were in the house. I was pregnant. I couldn't drink. And so, but I do remember being like, God damn it. Like, this sucks. Like, I really wish I could drink. I can't wait to be able to drink. And although I didn't drink during my pregnancies, which is another reason why I thought I didn't have a problem, is because I'm like, well, I don't drink or use during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people who have such a bad problem that they can't even stop when they're pregnant, and I can. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, but I remember being like, I can't wait, you know? And then it's like breastfeeding, and it's like, well, I already got my little strips ready. But anyway, I have my
pump
son.
And dump.
Yeah, pump and dump. Yeah. Yeah. Formula, you know, pumping excessively, trying to store as much milk as possible. I'm like sweating, like, so I could just drink again. So
that sounds miserable.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, so then I move out on my own. I'm living with my sister. I'm living with my boyfriend at the time. And it's... this a person that I had my second son with is, I don't even want to, like, it's just too much to even get into, but it was a horrible, toxic relationship. And I thought, if I could just be like a perfect, now I'm not married, but if I could be a perfect housewife who works over 40 hours a week, cooks, cleans, does this, does that, is perfect in bed, then if, you know, I lose the baby weight, if I get skinny, if I look better, then he'll love me. Mm-hmm. And I will be in a perfect little blended family, and I overcame all the odds. But it was a super toxic relationship, and I hated myself. And no matter how successful I became, no matter how I looked, didn't matter, and none of that mattered. It's like, he still treated me like shit. Mm-hmm. He still cheated on me. It was abusive, verbally, physically, everything. And I just, drinking became my ultimate coping mechanism. I would get off work, get home, and I had a secret stash underneath my sink. I would drink in the shower. I would sit in the bathroom and drink, like, before the shower, after the shower, drink as much as possible. And then I'd have, like, my alcohol out in public where, hey, you guys want to drink? You want a glass of wine? And I'm drinking normally in front of people, but I need to use the restroom. Excuse me. And I'm going to the bathroom and I'm drinking. And, you know, it's always like, well, the next day, like, why are you always significant? We all drink the same. Are you, oh, I'm like a lightweight now. I'm a lightweight now. And
right. Like when you first start drinking and it's like, I'm not a lightweight. And then when you're like heavy into alcoholism, you're like, yeah, I'm such a lightweight.
Yeah, I didn't have a big enough lunch. I'm losing all this weight. I had weight loss surgery. So it's like, it's the weight loss surgery, whatever. But I started using alcohol to cope. And then finally, I was just like, so it was like a 2022, towards the end of 2022, I was like, I'm so tired of being hungover. I just felt like shit. I was like, I'm tired of being tired. I'm starting to forget my kids' appointments. I'm starting to be late a lot. My life started to become unmanageable. And I was like, well, I remember these like meetings that are like for Narcotics Anonymous. Well, I'm going to find like an AA meeting to go to. And I went to an AA meeting. I made my boyfriend at the time. I was like, take me to an AA meeting. I'm hungover and I'm tired. And so I went to Clarkson.
Yeah, who wouldn't listen to that voice? Yeah. Whatever you say, dear. Shut up.
I went to Clarkson. Right. He's like, oh, my God, enough. So we go to Clarkston, and it was an older man sharing his story. And it was a lot of old men. There was one woman there. And he looks around and he goes, this is the kind of crowd that you're going to hang out with. Like, these are the kind of people that you're going to have to associate with because you're an alcoholic. And I was like, oh. So this guy tells a story. It was not anything profound or life-changing, whatever. But I was just so petrified and so scared and so tired. Mm. I remember, like, I got up to pick up a white chip and I broke down crying. And this woman came up to me afterwards and we exchanged phone numbers. I started chatting with her and I started going to AA meetings, and I was like, okay, I relate to a lot of the stuff that's being said. The woman I met, she was like, I have 26 years sober and I picked up one white chip, so you don't have to pick up another white chip after today. And I was like, oh my God, she's like a perfect woman. I can do that. Like, I will never pick up another white chip again. I'm also going to be like this lady, you know? And so I would go to meetings, and then when I started to talk to her and I asked her to be my sponsor, we started to start like the step work and whatnot. I was like, this is kind of a lot, but I felt physically better. I felt sharper. Mm-hmm. I felt healthier. I remember going through like the withdrawals and stuff, but I remember finally being able to like get sleep, and it was like so refreshing. And I told my family, I was like, I'm not drinking. I was drinking too much. I'm pumping the brakes on that. I feel good. I got a promotion at work. I got a raise. And I'm like, so okay, like this stuff that people talk about being sober, like it's pretty cool. And then I like stopped going to meetings because I was like, I'm working too much. And I remember she was like, you know, you really should be going to meetings like more often. You really should be. And I was like, ugh. And I was supposed to meet her twice a week. I started meeting her once a week. Then I stopped meeting her. And I was like, can we just do phone calls? I didn't call her every day. And so I would just go to the meetings and I started to treat alcohol like AA as like I'm like, this is like a place you come in after a rough day and you get to just like bitch and complain. You get to like raise your hand and be like, yeah, like today fucking sucked, but at least I'm sober, I guess, you know? And it's like, this is cool for that. But like all that other stuff of like the steps and the service work and all, it's a little much. Yeah.
And so do you, obviously you drink again after that. Mm-hmm. What happened then? Did it get worse than it was before?
Yeah. So actually I got into a huge fight with my boyfriend at the time. And I remember feeling so, it's like my skin was like on fire and I was like tingling. I was so upset. I was so frustrated. And I took like an eyebrow razor and I cut my thigh open. And in that moment, I looked on my leg and it was just gushing blood. And I was like, oh my God. And I started like screaming and I had to be taken to the hospital. And I got stitched up and they're like, you know, asking me all these questions and whatnot. And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm not suicidal. I just had a moment of like, I panicked and I had this in my hand and I cut myself. And this woman came in and she's like, how much do you drink? And that was my first time telling somebody the truth. I was like, I drink every single day. She's like, I'm not here to diagnose you, but I suggest like 12 steps. Do you think you need treatment? I was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Not that T word again.
Enough. No, I don't need all that. But I just remember she was like, it was just like I felt some freedom admitting to somebody like, I don't have this under control. Like I feel so out of control. Well, she explained to me, she's like, you feel so out of control in your brain. You're taking this away from, you're taking this alcohol. You're trying to take it, you're stripping it away for a few days and your brain is so used to it and your body's so used to it that then it wants to feel something. And so you did that as like a way to feel something and to feel like you have some sort of control. And I was like, what? And, but it's like, that's it. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like in that moment, I just was like, I am so overwhelmed. I don't know what to do with all my feelings, all these emotions. And I just like sliced my thigh open. Yeah. And so it took a while after that, a lot of like fighting with my boyfriend. And I'm sorry, I forgot what your question really was, but it's like,
it was, did it get worse? And it sounds like it did. It definitely did.
It did. After that happened, I mean, it was just like constant ridicule and it just, I hated my job. Being a mom was like really difficult. And then I have two kids with two different dads. I'm not married. And I'm just like, I hate myself. Like, what have I done with my life? I mean, that's the best ways is I fucking hated myself. And I didn't know how to explain that to anybody because people were like, you have such a great life. You have a great job. You have your own place. You have a good car. You have, your children are healthy. And that would make me cry. Instead of being like, yeah, that's true, it would make me cry because I was like, I know that stuff.
Yeah.
I know I have a great family. I know I have my health. I know I'm very blessed, but I hate my life. I hate it. And I would get so belligerently, eventually, you know, I would get so drunk. My parents would have to come over because I would just be a complete, utter mess. And so the facade, the image was cracking. And the more my image was cracking of like perfect employee, perfect this, perfect that, and trying to maintain these two separate things where it's like Josie in the world versus Josie behind the scenes and drinking more and more and more. My drinking turns into nighttime, daily, morning, midday. You know, if I don't have my kids, it's like, I can drink all day. You know, I'm getting home from work. I've got the shakes. I've got the sweats. I'm running to the freezer, chugging vodka, you know, gagging while you're drinking. And then it's like, okay, let me put it down. Now I feel like relaxed. But hating that you have to, I know I do get to the point where it's like I'm physically dependent on this.
Right.
Or I'm going to be sick. And if I'm sick, I can function better drunk then when I'm going through withdrawals and I'm shaking because I'm sitting at work, I'm dripping sweat, and people are like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, oh, I have anxiety.
It's like, well, yeah, but also
yeah,
crippling alcoholism.
Yes, yeah.
That part's silent, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what finally, like, what's the straw that breaks camel's back and now you're in treatment?
So two things happened. One, I was working at the office, and I see a guy that I used to see at Clarkston. He brings his daughter in for an appointment. I recognize him, and I was like, oh, my God, that's crazy, because I have been thinking, should I go back to AA? But I feel like if I walk into the rooms, people are going to be like, where have you been? Boo. Like, tomato, tomato, tomato. You know? Where? What, like, I thought I was going to walk in, people were going to be like, where have you been? Like, you know? And so I was like, I don't, but I saw this man, and I wanted so badly to say something to him, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a little bit, I meet you. And I'm like,
sorry.
And I'm like, gosh, like, I really want to do this. I really want to do this. One day during the height of me living on my, you know, just drinking, I wake up and I'm so drunk still that I'm like, I'm late to work because I'm sick. Pull over to the liquor store, wait for it to open, go in, buy a pint, drink, get to work. And I, like I said, I hated my job. And I built such a resentment because it, you know, because this job takes advantage of me, because of the hours I work, because I don't get paid enough, because they make me drink. I show up to work, I'm totally wasted. And I walk in, and it's blurry, but I walked in and I was like, no, there's not even somewhere for me to sit down. And I sit down on a computer and I see an email from my boss, don't know what it said, and I quit. I resigned right then and there. I was like, I'm resigning because if I don't resign, I'm never going to do better. Because for me to stop drinking, I need to leave this job. I quit my job. They're like, hey, come to our, you know, our location in Lilburn. We need to talk to you about your resignation. I go in there, drinking on my way there. I'm in the parking lot. I'm drinking. And I go inside for a meeting, and I just, like, lost it on these people. I was like, I don't, all this stuff. They accepted my resignation 2 days later, and they were like, it's effective immediately. You can, we're going to escort you to clear your desk. To this day, I don't know if they knew that I was drunk. If anybody's listening to this, yes, I was drunk in that conference room. I was wasted. So I go, I clear my desk, and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe I quit my job without having a job lined up. I am single. I live in this apartment that's like $1,700 a month. My car note is $450. I have this. I have that. Oh, my God, I have no job. That, to me, I was like, okay, I fucked up. But that's okay. I'm going to be able to get back on my feet. Well, I think that was a Thursday. And from that day all the way until Monday, total blackout. Complete blackout. Disappearing, my friends, reaching out to my family. And then I woke up that Monday and I was like completely, my mom called and she's like, hey, Joseph is not at the bus stop. Is he not going to school? And I'm like, oh my God, it's Monday. Like, I've been drinking sun up to sundown for days. And I broke down. I called my ex and I was like, I need you to come over and help me. I don't know what to do. And so I was just like, take my phone, call, the least you can do after, you know, is call places and see if you can get me in for treatment, because I can't physically do this. And now I'm like completely, I'm jobless, I'm scared. And my sister, my mom, my cousin came over and I told them, I was like, I've been drinking nonstop and I need to go to detox. And I went to Southeast Addiction Center in Rome and I went to detox there.
Yeah.
Finally.
And I remember you were texting me during this time and you were just like, do I need to go to treatment? How do I know if I need to go to treatment? Should I go to detox? I don't know what to do. What am I? It was like the most anxiety riddled text. Yeah. And I'm just like, are you safe? Are you okay? Like, do you need to talk to somebody? Do you need me to call a place? Like, are you going to make it through the night? Like,
yeah.
So, and you're like, no, but I'm fine. And then you'd be like, but what if I'm not fine? Like, I don't know. Should I go to treatment?
So finally they, now mind you, it's like, I have no insurance. And so a lot of places were like, well, and he's like on the, you know, his purpose was just to like pick up the, cause I basically was like, I'm too scared to speak. But anyway, finally I find a place like, okay, we'll figure out the insurance. We'll figure out the money. We're going to send you an Uber, pack your stuff. We'll send you a list of things to pack and come to treatment. And so I went there and I was like, I'm only coming for 3 days. They're like, well, you got to do at least five. I was like, well, I'll only do five. And then I stayed for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And when I left there, I was like, I'm cured. I'm clean. I feel better. You know, this was actually pretty cool. It was pretty awesome to have, you know, assistance in detoxing. And I was applying for jobs while I was there during we would get phone time 2 hours a day. And I was applying for jobs aggressively. And I just was like, I'm going to come out of this on top. I'm going to like beat this addiction. I'm going to be cured. And I had that mentality again of like, I'm going to feel physically better. And because I've hit this bottom of like quitting my job with no job, completely running rampant, scaring people, scaring my children and leaving my children, I'm going to be back and better than ever. But I wasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
And so as we come in for a close, let's talk about like a little bit on the actual recovery piece. What has that been like navigating recovery as a single working mom?
Well, I finally surrendered and realized I'm an alcoholic. I am not going to be cured. I went to treatment a second time, and that time I stayed for the full 3 weeks. And there was a lot of education in it. And I was just like, I'm scared about not being there for my family and not being there for my kids. But what is the quality that I'm giving them by not getting help, by not getting well? I'm not giving them anything. So I have to get myself well and get myself get serious about a program. And I have to just, I broke my lease. I'm not going to work. I moved into sober living. I did PHP and I was like, I am blessed enough to be able to do this. And I have my family support to help me with my children. And so I had to just stop everything. I had to just completely strip everything and realize I'm not a failure. I'm not failing anybody by getting help. I'm failing myself and I'm failing everybody around me by being in this never ending cycle. And I remember one time my sister said to me, she was like, either accept the help and do it or just don't do it. But just like make up your mind. If you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, then don't do it. But I just decided, okay, I'm going to make recovery like my life. For 4 months, I did sober living. I did my program. I got really serious. I made myself goals, which, I was like, okay, 90 days, I'm going to start chairing meetings. I'm going to be really involved in like the 12-step program. I just was like really, really engaged and I built a community and I stopped lying to everybody. I stopped lying to myself. Mm-hmm. I came clean about like how toxic my relationship was, how miserable I was, how much I was drinking, and it just put everything out on the table. And so now I have 13 months.
Hell yeah, you do.
And I live with my parents and my kids, and I have work a program, and I work a 12-step program, and I just have like built a community and like a network, and I don't do this by myself. I stopped with the isolation, and I just had to like overcome. Like I remember telling you this, like I'm just like so scared, like what am I gonna do if I don't have a job? What am I gonna do if I don't have my own place? What am I gonna do if I can't pay my bills? And you were like, everything will fall into place. And so that's just like how I live my life now. You know, recovery comes first, like going to meetings, being sober, that comes first, and everything else falls into place. And it has.
Exactly.
My relationships, work, trust, friendships, everything else falls into place. And just because recovery and sobriety is first, it doesn't mean that I'm neglecting everybody in my life and that I'm like being selfish in the way that I thought it was. It's just, without sobriety, I have nothing else. I'm just like a shell of a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, it has been super inspirational to watch the growth that you've had from the freaking out of like, do I go to treatment? Do I not go to treatment? Am I an alcoholic? Am I not an alcoholic?
Yeah.
To now being like, you are very dedicated towards your sobriety and your recovery and you take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And not to say like, you are not a serious person. Like you,
right.
You are when you need to be, yeah. But like you are very quirky and goofy and hilarious. And like, I know so many people who just enjoy knowing you and love to be around you. And that's not something people say about people in their throes of addiction. You know, it's like that is that transformation. And honestly, you were like a godsend for me because when you were reaching out to me, like when you were at your bottom and you're like needing to get help and don't know what to do, I was going through one of the lowest points of my life. Yeah. And I was like, cool, I don't want to be alive anymore, but you needed help.
Yeah.
And thank God you reached out to me because for a second I was like, cool, I have a purpose. If it's just to text this girl back, you know, like, okay, maybe you should go to treatment, but you know, it's like, that's the cycle of recovery. It's like we help each other out, and by helping each other out, we help ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, like you help me more than I've helped you. Like I can tell you that as a fact, you know. I'm very proud of how far you've come.
Thank you.
And it's just, like I said, it's just been inspirational to watch you blossom into who you are.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have any last comment, last word of advice maybe for someone who's teetering on the should I not?
I would say if you have any ability to go to treatment, if you have, like, if you can, you know, there's so many resources out there and there's so much help, do it. But listen to them. There's a reason why they want you to stay. There's a reason why you need to, like, put it first. I would say there's no shame in going to treatment. There's nothing wrong with it, especially being a woman, especially, you know, being a Hispanic mother. There is nothing wrong with asking for help and getting help. And there is, you know, you have so much, we have so much, hopefully so much time, taking a little chunk of, you know, a few weeks or a couple months out of your life to get help. It's going to benefit your children and everyone around you, and it's just going to benefit you so much. And there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't make you a bad mom. It doesn't make you less of a woman. You know, just it's okay. And I wish, when I look back, it's like, I would have had somebody tell me that, you know, especially another, like, mother, you know, to say, like, hey, it's okay. You do not have to wear 10,000 hats and be superwoman. You can't. You cannot carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, especially in active addiction. You're going to crumble. And it's okay to ask for help and to be honest. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you to our donors for making this show possible. And we had the interns. We had Bailey and Caleb and Jason on the ones and twos tonight producing this show. And this has been another episode of The Most High Show.